Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to another episode of All In on Offense on USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. And joining me today is the offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach at Gonzaga High School, Coach Danny Schechter. Danny, it's great to have you here.
Thanks for having me. First time caller, long time listener.
Well, it is great to have you here. I appreciate you following, and you know, we've been able to talk a little bit through Twitter, which is just a great avenue for meeting coaches and learning some things. But before we get into you, talk to us a little bit about your high school. Share with our listeners a little bit about Gonzaga. I know you guys, you know, have some national recognition, have been nationally ranked at times. Just tell us a little bit about the program.
So Gonzaga College High School, we play in the what's called the WCAC, the Washington Catholic Athletic Conference, one of the best conferences in the nation. So you know, every week that we go out to play an opponent, we're playing somebody in the, you know, top 50 basically in the nation. The school itself is just one of the top schools that you could go to in the area for both athletics, but more importantly for academics. You know, there's an admissions process. Kids have to take, you know, a test to get into the school and score high on it. It's basically like going to college. You have to do an application, an essay, test. You have to have good grades, all that kind of stuff. So the student athletes that we have on the team have to go through a highly challenging process with a lot of other competition, you know, from some kids who aren't going to be playing any sports. They're just about academics. So you know, we don't just get every single player that we would like to have. Now, we have really good football players, but more importantly, they're great young men that come from great families, and they're great students. So that's kind of what we hang our hat on. As a high school team, we kind of try and compare ourselves to, you know, like a Notre Dame or a Stanford, where we have to overcome a little bit of a talent disparity with work ethic, toughness, a family culture, and a true team.
Coach, share a little bit about your background. You know, what got to this point that you're at right now as the offensive coordinator and quarterback coach?
Okay, this might take a minute, but I'll try and hurry through it. You know, first and foremost, it always starts with my parents, my mom and dad. My mom has been my number one supporter since day one, never missed a game or anything like that. She was always there for me to support me and give me the love that I needed. But, you know, she was tough. So she would also push me very hard to be my best. And then, you know, my dad, you know, he's my hero. So that's the guy that I try and be like in every way, shape, and form. And he was the one who, you know, really taught me the never quit attitude. I'm only like 5'5" and my dad's about 5'10". So back in the day, we'd be playing one-on-one basketball, and he's backing me down like he's Shaquille O'Neal, and I'm like 7 years old, and he's kicking my butt. And then my mom is like, can't you let him score a point? Can't you let him win? And my dad's like, he's either got to learn to be tough and fight through it, or he's going to quit. And so that's kind of where the drive and the passion and the competitive nature started flowing. You know, played high school ball, and due to my lack of size, I knew, you know, college wasn't really in the cards for me. And so I became an undergraduate student assistant at Illinois State University. And I was so lucky because I was able to be under, you know, the head coach was Denver Johnson. The offensive coordinator at the time was Justin Puente. The receiver coach was Brad Cornelson. At the time, you know, you had running backs coach Holman Wiggins. So you have a lot of these guys who've gone on to some prominent college careers. And I was able to kind of just be a fly on the wall and study under them. But even before becoming the undergraduate student assistant, I was an equipment manager. So I was washing jock straps. So I've definitely had to work my way all the way from the bottom and to this point. So after doing the undergraduate student assistant thing under those guys, I went out to North Carolina. I was teaching and coaching at Fayetteville, North Carolina, called Jack Britt High School. Had a great experience there. And then after a year, went to the junior college ranks to NEO, Northeastern Oklahoma A&M Junior College, Oklahoma A&M Junior College, which is in Miami, Oklahoma. And that was an interesting experience, because the best thing to do in that town was go to Walmart. And junior college was just really different than everything that I was used to. And in a lot of ways, sometimes the best way to learn how you like to coach and what you believe in is to see things that you don't believe in. And that was kind of my experience there. Fortunate enough to earn a graduate assistant job at Arkansas Tech University, Wonder Boys. That was awesome. A couple of years where I was able to earn my master's degree. And it also taught me the importance of the quarterback position. Not that I didn't know it was important beforehand, but our first year there, we had this guy named Nick Graziano who transferred in from Nevada. And fun fact, he was starting over Colin Kaepernick until he broke his foot. Kaepernick takes over the job, and then the rest is history there. But we had Graz, and he was unbelievable. He's a Harlan Hill finalist and took us to the second round of the playoffs. The next year, we got a lot of returning pieces and we're feeling really good about where we are. And then, quarterback wise, we didn't have that same guy. So the season went the other way, and it wasn't nearly as good of a year as my first year there. Then after that, it's the choice. Do you want to chase the college dream? Or, for me, it was, I really want to try and have an impact on young people. And I feel like us high school coaches really get to make the biggest impact on a student athlete's lives in the formative years between, 14 to 18 years old, or for some kids now, like 19 years old, and just being such a crucial part during that crucial time when they're growing up. And that's really where I felt at home, was the high school level. So, I was able to get a job at a place called Landmark High School in Florida under Coach Randy Trivers, and there for 3 seasons. What was really special about that was the place was kind of a loser culture. They hadn't been a very good football team for a long time, and then just the general area was just, it wasn't a vibrant community by any stretch of the imagination, low socioeconomic status. And, we really were able to use football as a vehicle to change these kids' lives, where, before it was, they're lucky to graduate high school. And then, you're able to change that expectation of you're going to graduate high school and then you're going to go to college. So that was a special 3 years being in that area. And then Coach Trivers, he's from the DMV, and he got the opportunity to coach, take over the head coaching job at Gonzaga. And he asked me to come up, and, I followed him up here. And really a big part of that was actually getting my wife, my current wife, she was my girlfriend at the time, to, I had to sucker her into moving away from the nice weather in Florida up to D.C. Not that the weather is terrible like some places in the country, but, it's not nearly as nice. It's a lot nicer in Florida right now this time of year than it is up here. So luckily I was able to get her to say yes. We moved up here, and this will be my 7th season at Gonzaga. It's been a special time, and the level of football is great, but it's just so lucky to be able to work with a bunch of great guys on the coaching staff, as well as the student athletes that we get to work with. And then, the history of the school, it's been around since 1821. This year, we'll be celebrating the bicentennial coming up, and it's just incredible, historic school, and a lot of fun to work at. So that's kind of been my road to Gonzaga, starting from the equipment manager room at Illinois State University, and now in the heart of D.C., the nation's capital. We're about like 5 blocks away from the Capitol building, and couldn't be happier. And this is my 10th season with our head coach, and you know how that is. Very rarely are you able to work with someone for that long.
Yeah, it is getting rare these days, and thank you for sharing that journey and that climb that you've made. On the football side of things today, the X and O side, we're going to focus on what's really the backbone of your offense, which is the power game. And before we get into that, I guess for you, where did you learn it all, or what resources did you pull together, I guess, to come up with the system you're running right now?
So it's been a little bit of a grab bag. So, you know, a lot of what I teach for the quarterbacks came from Illinois State, you know, from Coach Fuente and Cornelson and some of the passing concepts. And then, you know, run game wise, our head coach, Coach Trivers, he was, you know, power football. That was his MO. And so when I moved down to Leesburg, that was the system that he wanted. He wanted to hang our hat on power football. And so, you know, the way that I basically teach it, the concept of it is how he instilled it into me. You know, I was at other places that had power in the system, but we were much more of a zone team. So growing up, you know, my younger coaching career, I was, you know, definitely an inside zone kind of a guy. And then when I got to Coach T, became, you know, a power guy. And really at the end of the day, both are great and both are, you know, physical football plays if you coach them that way. So as far as, you know, the some of the learning and the changes that have come, you know, from obviously watching a lot of video, you know, learning some stuff from the North Dakota State guys. And then, you know, our new old line coach, well, he's not new anymore. This will be a third season. But, you know, he really helped us with our power game, just techniques and fundamentals, especially when it came to double teams. That really became a crucial improvement. And then this past season, we actually changed the technique of our fullback, which once again, you know, made the play better than it had been previously.
Yeah, and I'm definitely going to want to touch on a couple of those things with you and the changes that you made. Well, Coach, talk to us a little bit about the power and how it fits into the philosophy of what you guys want to do on offense.
So we want to be a fast-paced and physical offense. At some point, you're going to have to basically snatch the soul of your opponent. You want to make them quit, and we feel like the power run game is what we can hang our hat on and do it. So the way that we sell it to our players is power is such a great play that the other team can know that you're going to be bringing it. They can know exactly where you are running it, but through physical fundamentals and technique, aggression, understanding, and then just the belief in the play, we're going to be able to execute and they can't stop it. So that's kind of where we, you know, start with the players.
Coach, before we go into all the variations and the way you protect it, let's talk about the concept itself. You know, we were talking with Coach from Kansas State, you know, and those guys came over from North Dakota State, and he had been there, and he said, you know, not all power is the same, and certainly we see all kinds of different variations, different techniques, so I do think it's worthwhile spending some time on how you guys run the power. So walk us through the concept.
If I were in front of our players right now, exactly how I would teach it. So, you know, the first thing that we'd say is, you know, power is a series of down blocks and double teams with two chances to kick out the defense. This is something that we make our players say and say over and over again, regurgitate it over and over again, so that they understand the overall scheme verbally. A series of down blocks and double teams with two chances to kick out the defense. And what we'll teach is, you know, just draw it up against the basic over front, because that's the easiest way to teach it, and teaching how the front side guys on the play side, they're going to each have, they have a gap. Their gap is the most important thing. So tight end on down to center, they're going to step to their inside gap, no matter what's going on. That their first step is always going to take them there. Now, if there's nobody in their inside gap, they're going to do one of two things. They're either going to, you know, go up to the second level, linebacker level, or they have a chance to double team the guy next to him. So, You know, for the tight end, if there's somebody in his C gap, he's got to down block it. If there's nobody in his C gap, then he's going to be able to go to the second level. For the play side tackle, if there's somebody in his B gap, he's got to down block that. And if there's nobody there, then he's either going to be able to go to the second level or possible double team with the tight end. With the play side guard, just like the tackle, if there's nobody in his gap, he's either traveling up to backer, or more than likely he's going to be double teaming a three technique. And then the center, you know, he's got the back block. He's going to go to the backside A, or, you know, since the guard's pulling, it's technically always going to be a backside A gap. It could be a little bit wider, what guys would think of more of a B gap. And, you know, his block doesn't need to be devastating. The key to his block is that he doesn't get beat over the top by the nose of the defensive tackle. And then the backside tackle, he's got the backside B gap to backside C gap with the funnel hinge technique. The two kickout blocks come from the backside guard. We teach the skip pull, and we used to, you know, talk about, hey, if there's a three technique on your side or a one technique on your side, you know, think about your pull doing this or that. But this year we simplified it, and we would tell him, you need to own your angle to the play side linebacker. So you're going to skip pull, and you're going to get your depth, and then you're going to find that play side linebacker, and whatever angle you need to own to get there, that's what you're going to own. So if someone's in your path and you got to help blow it up, that's fine. You have to own your angle to that play side linebacker. And really, we didn't have to drill pulling nearly as much this past year by just simplifying that coaching point and teaching them, you know, the angle that they should be attacking with the inside V of the net, V of the play side backer.
Coach, I do like that coaching point right there and giving it the detail. And, you know, I think just thinking about it as a kickout block, and that's something I want to say for me, changed just in the way we never used that terminology as two kickouts. But when we started to think of that second puller, that guard, as a kickout block, for whatever reason, started to help him too, as he would visualize what he was going to do. And then you adding in that coaching point, like the V of the neck, I think is very important.
Yes, those kinds of details are crucial, and they're ones where a player can use his eyes in order to get him on that path. So that way, he, you know, his body is really going to follow his eyes, right? Perception and action. So if you give them, you know, stuff that's on the ground, you know, that's where their eyes are going to go, and that's not going to answer any questions for them. So, you know, using the inside V was helpful, and just the idea of owning their angle. So it doesn't, you know, matter where that player starts, it's where he ends up being. And I'm going to own my angle to that inside V, and just really cut down on the teaching of the different places where they might fit, you know, regarding the down blocks on the front side and the double teams on the front side.
Yeah, and I think when you look at the teams who are very good, making that power a downhill play almost all the time, you know, you're not seeing it bounce, because you'll see some teams who maybe dabble in it, and you'll see those plays bounce a little bit, which is exactly what the defense wants. But I think these little coaching points are what gets you those lanes to run in downhill. Even if it has to move out slightly, it's still a play that feels real downhill when you do it right.
Exactly. And, you know, it correlates, you know, that being a kickout block correlates with what we tell our backs, just like you're saying. We don't want power to bounce. We want to really hit it in the A gap first, and then the B gap. And if you teach it as a kickout block, you allow for that to happen. Whereas if it's not taught as a kickout block, then, you know, the back ends up being a little bit more indecisive, and an indecisive back is going to want to bounce plays because they're used to being faster than everybody else, and in youth league it worked all the time, but the higher you go, the less likely bouncing it is going to actually work.
So let's talk about the next kickout block, the fullback, and you mentioned that you guys changed some technique in what you're doing with the fullback.
Yep, so what we teach the fullback is, to the tight end, he's going to take a path to the B gap. It's going to be a banana path, which is what it should look like on the board, and that's what it should basically look like on the field. And he's going to kick out first thing that shows up on his path. He doesn't have a man. He's got a path. And what we tell him is, you know, aim right, hit right. So when you're going to the right, we want to get our near foot, the nearest foot to the defensive player, which would be our right foot and our right shoulder, into the defender. And then away from the tight end, the path is the A-gap banana, mandatory kick out, aim left, aim right, hit right. But we've been using that for a while, and it had been pretty good, but we were having some issues with, you know, that defensive end flipping the fullback, or, you know, sometimes even being able to spill them no matter how much we coached up the banana path. And so this year we used the gallop technique. So just like how an offensive lineman gallops, you know, for a double team, that's exactly the method that we use for the fullback. So what we would tell the fullbacks is they're going to first step with their backside leg to their gap. So if I had to go to the B gap, we're running power to the right, and I have to step to the B gap, I'm going to step to the B gap with my left foot. The reason we didn't want them to do it with their right foot is because we found then that was going to open their hips. And when they open their hips, they're giving the defender a two-way go, and they're more likely to be spilled. Whereas if they step with the backside foot, and then the next step comes, boom, their hips are going to stay square to the line of scrimmage. So I step with my left, my backside foot, so we're on power to the right, step with my left foot to the B gap, then my right foot comes. And then after that, I'm not crossing my feet over. I'm driving off of my left foot, catching with my right foot, and I'm just making little gallop steps. And then once the moment of contact occurs, I'm already in great position with three joint flexion of the ankles, knees, and hips. And I'm aim right, hit right. And you can do the same thing, obviously, going the other way. And what we were able to do with that is we had a converted linebacker who weighed about 200 pounds. And he's a great kid, tough kid. We taught him that technique. And he's kicking out guys who are going to Alabama and Ohio State all year long. Now, this guy's going to be a D3 football player, but he's kicking out guys that are power five defensive ends, you know, freaks of nature, and it's just unbelievable. And even he said, well, I don't know if I've been able to do that if I wasn't doing the gallop technique. And that was a huge difference. It definitely helped our power run game, especially from the fullback spot.
Coach, when you're running that, and I believe, and you talked about this a little bit, so you guys run it to the tight, you guys run it to the open side as well?
Yep.
What designates for you whether it's going to a tight end or an open side, and is that important in the call or not?
So the only thing that matters is the play direction that we give. So, you know, if we call the formation, it's eye right, you know, tight ends on the right, and we say that we're running power to the right, the guys are going to follow their rules, their gap rules. If there's somebody in my gap, then I got to down block it. If there's nobody in my gap, then I'm either double teaming or I'm going to the second level. And that's to the tight end side or away from the tight end side. So if we want to just call power away from the tight end, we can say eye right and then power left. And then as long as everybody's following their rules and techniques, you know, nothing changes. The biggest difference is really for the fullback understanding that him kicking out that five technique is going to be a tighter path than if he were to kick out, you know, a seven, a six, or a nine technique.
So then he really just needs to understand whether he's to the tight end or away.
Exactly.
That shouldn't be a difficult thing to do, but obviously part of his mental process pre-snap.
Correct. And, you know, that's the thing with the fullback at our schools, you know, or in our system, is we don't tell him exactly where to line up every single time. He has to learn it through the plays. The play and the play direction really tell him where he needs to align. So, you know, at first we'll use all the little words that we have to in our formation stuff in order to get him to align properly. But then after some time in the offense, we can eliminate that word. So that way the play call is less wordy and we can go faster. So instead of having to, you know, say, you know, king or queen to get him in like a strong or a weak position to get him to the tight end side or away from the tight end side, he ends up just learning it based on the play.
The double teams or something you mentioned too is a focus and something you changed, you got better at. Talk to us a little bit about your double teams.
Yeah, so as far as the double teams go, the offensive line coach that we have right now, you know, came to us, and he's a Charles Bentley guy. And so just the drive catch stuff that he brought, as well as, you know, the gallop technique, really is what helps our double teams. Because we used to tell our guys, you know, hey, we're trying to get hip to hip and stay vertical. And then what we ended up becoming last year, the year before last, was a horizontal displacement team. So that's where he would use what he called a jab pop. So the inside guy in the double team would jab to his play side gap, because you always have to step to your gap in power first to protect it. And, you know, keeping your eyes in there. So he would take the step with his inside foot, and then the pop is more vertical with the outside foot and the arm coming through the defender. And then the outside man, so he'd be a post man, so the outside one would be the one trying to create the horizontal displacement, and he would be the one galloping and really trying to knock the hip. And that one worked quite well with us, because we were able to displace people a lot more, as opposed to when we were trying to move them vertically.
I like that idea. And, you know, displacement, distortion of the defense is important. And it really, I think, with that kind of a mentality and working on things the way you do, just in making sure you're blocking a gap, you start to be very sound against all the different things a defense can do, especially movement.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a great quote from the college football national championship from Derek Mason, where, you know, he says, you know, that they try and coach and prepare guys for the 80% that they can basically predict that's going to happen in a game. And then the rules and concepts and everything and techniques that the players are taught, that accounts for the 20% that we can't predict. And so that's basically what we're trying to do. Hey, here are the rules, here are the techniques, and this is what we expect the opponent to be doing. But in case they're not doing it, or they're being unsound or whatever, as long as you stick to your rules, techniques, you should be able to overcome the craziness that is the world of football. The other big technique that our offensive line coach, Colin Casey, instilled was the keying the knee of the next down lineman, because keying that knee basically was going to tell you where you were going to be working to. So, you know, if that knee stayed in the gap that it was in, then, you know, you were going to be driving it. If it worked away from you, all right, now it becomes, you know, the next man's problem. And then if it worked towards you, then, you know, hey, I'm going to be taking this one on my own. So, you know, keying the knee, we're always trying to give them eye visuals so that they can have perception and then action. And then, you know, trying to give them those key detailed fundamentals and techniques that they can just hang their hat on and execute.
So you mentioned starting your teaching from the over front, you know, on whatever that might be, on the whiteboard, in your playbook, walkthroughs, etc. As you're teaching this, you know, for you to train your players, especially early on, how much time do you spend staying on that front? When do you start changing fronts? When do you start showing a movement?
Great question. So we really try and focus on even front and off front between, you know, like an under front and a 3-4 defense, as well as, hey, these are where the linebackers are going to be in an even front versus an odd front. And so, you know, we really try and speak to the even and odd, instead of trying to teach them, hey, an over and under, you know, a 3-4 under, 3-4 over, try and keep it as simple as possible so we can communicate more quickly. And as far as, you know, like showing them different fronts, we just start right from the beginning and show them, hey, this is power versus the even front, you know, with a 3 technique over here. Then here's power versus the over front with a 3 technique on the other side. And we try and get them to just follow the rules that we give the blocking pattern. So, hey, I'm going to give you this first picture, and here are the rules. All right, now the picture is a little bit different. Let's follow the rules and see if we can draw this up correctly. And for the most part, and we got smart kids, but even, you know, any place I've been at, using that kind of method, they're able to figure it out. And then if they get it wrong, you're able to say, okay, how come you weren't able to, what happened with the rules where you got tripped up? And then you're able to help, mentally correct them right then and there. And they're able to kind of discover, okay, this makes more sense, as opposed to, hey, here are that we're going to be blocking this year for power. Just copy these down and study them. Giving them that kind of a playbook.
So coach, talk to us a little bit about the guys handling the ball, the quarterback and his footwork on this, in order to be able to get his running back on the path you want him. And I think there's important coaching points on that, because you don't want to force your guy wide, as well as the footwork for your running back so that he's able to start on that A-gap course.
Yep, absolutely. So with the quarterback, we just use the hands on the clock. So, it's mandated on power. We want to give the running back the A-gap. So when the quarterback drives out from under center, he needs to drive out at 6 o'clock. And of course, the best way to work that is working tracks, the backs, every single day. In the shotgun, the biggest thing for the quarterback is making sure, once again, he stays at 6 o'clock. So when he catches the ball and goes to hand it to the running back, he's got to more turn his body. He can't step all the way into the running back, because he has to give the running back the A gap. And really, we do, 6 o'clock, we explode out. You want to seat the ball in your belly. And then we do a two-hand show, got it from Dub and NFA, with the two-hand show, because it really helps with the play action portion, with the snap and the sell of it when you go with the two-hand show. As far as the running back goes, we use a slide step. So if I'm the running back and I'm in the I formation and wearing power to the right, what I'm going to do is I'm going to patiently drive off my left foot and take a side step, and then boom, I'm landing on my right foot, and I'm keeping my belly button and eyes in the A gap. And same thing is going to happen in the shotgun, no matter which side the running back is on. We put our heels on the toes of the quarterback, so the running back can sidestep and get himself in position in the A gap with square shoulders. That's one of the biggest things that we emphasize, is having, square toes and square shoulders, because it's hard for a running back to hit it in the A gap if he's turned, or if he's displaced himself out of the A gap. It's hard to fall back in on that one. So when that A gap is open, you better be square and you better be able to hit it, because it can close up quick, and it's basically impossible to go from B gap and falling back into the play.
Now, coach, at times the Will linebacker is going to scrape over the top of that combination, sometimes too soon. What coaching points do you have, especially for that young running back? I know for us, it was always, guys, there's no cutback on this. But then we would teach him to start to see that later, because we wanted him coming downhill. We didn't want him thinking cut back. But then we would have to start to account for and teach that variation. How do you handle that?
Yep. So we would try and kind of like you, hey, we're hitting this A gap to B gap to inside hip of the pulling guard. And then once they've learned, hey, we're not bouncing it, and this is the rules that I'm following, then we were teaching them, hey, this is when we can really hit that cutback. It's going to usually be, be just beyond, just through that line of scrimmage, and that the Mike linebacker is going to kind of tell you if that cutback is going to open up or not. If he's scraping, then there's going to be something, another defender scraping with him, kind of like a fighter pilot, I got your six. So if that Mike scrapes, be ready for that cutback to possibly be hitting. Whereas if he's plugging it, then there's not as likely a big a likelihood, because there's not going to be another scraper coming.
And I like what you bring up there. It's a really good point. We'd always talk about that too, that it was a level two cutback. We wanted him to think of it that way, that this play does not cut back until you cross the line of scrimmage. then you could fill that cavity right there. But it was very important then to like get back downhill immediately.
Yep. And, you know, that marries up basically to almost like what we teach our guys on a bubble screen, that, you know, that it's a race to get 5 yards outside. And then once you get that, those 5 yards, then you could start thinking of hitting the home run with that big old cutback that guys can do on the bubble. But you got to get through the LOS. It's a second level cutback. 100% correct.
Well, Coach, a play like this requires a lot of investment, and most people who run it really don't dabble in power. They find a way to make it a core play of what they're doing. And in order to be able to do that, it's a play that you dress up, use different formations, use different personnel. Talk to us about how you do that.
Yeah, so it all starts with the rules. The rules of the play don't change. And so, you know, we can run it out of any personnel grouping, any formation, and our rules stay constant. And as long as you have that, you know, as long as you're teaching in always and nevers instead of ifs and buts, then your guys are going to be confident in their ability to execute the play. So, you know, we'll dress it up, whether it's with jet motion, which is arguably the best motion in football, or one of my favorites is to dress it up with the running back doing the push motion, and then you're able to get like a screen run option with the quarterback. So it's, you know, quarterback power, and for the offensive lineman, for the fullback, the run is exactly the same. You know, now the only difference is who's carrying the football. Well, the old linemen don't care who's carrying the football. As long as they get to block people up and hit them in the face and take their souls, they're happier than hell. So they don't care who's carrying it. All that changes is the backfield and how they handle the football. So, you know, whether it's the quarterback running it, tailback running it, dressing it up with jet motion, you know, so those are some of the favorite things that we like to do. And then one that I think going to every game, we want to see how are they going to handle an unbalanced formation. Because if we're able to get numbers at the point of attack, we're going to just, you know, keep picking that scab over and over and over again until the defense adjusts. And then once the defense adjusts, that's where you go to, you know, a constriction play. You know, once they kind of start overcompensating to an unbalanced formation, now, hey, I can hit them the other way.
So as you're looking at the different things you do, I mean, like you said, the defense is going to do some things to adjust. What kind of constraint plays are you using to protect the power?
Yep. So one of our favorites is a tight end pop pass. So, you know, running power away from the tight end. And then like what you were talking about with, hey, a scraping linebacker. Well, if that linebacker wants to scrape so fast, well, we can just replace him with a tight end on a short pop pass. And, you know, it's not as cool as the Tebow jump pass, but it's just as effective. I mean, it's the same thought process where you got some fast fillers, and you could hit a pop pass, which is arguably the easiest RPO throw that you can make, since it's a short pitch and catch. The other ways that we do it is, you know, play action, obviously. You know, Andrew Luck said it on the John Gruden QB camp, you know, back in the day, if you want to have a great play action, you know, you pull a guard. So the, you know, that spider two, Y banana, whatever the heck you want to call it, good hard play action, pulling the guard, being able to dump the ball to the fullback in the flat, you know, is another one. But the favorite for us is through our screen game. So I love tunnel screens. To me, tunnel into the boundary at the high school level is a lot easier to hit than tunnel to the field, just because the hashes are so wide. So, you know, when we have a team that is a defense that we're playing as a discipline, and you can see those linebackers reading guard pull, what we'll do on our screen, our tunnel screen, is we're going to have that backside guard pull, and you've just blocked multiple defenders through their keys and discipline by pulling one guy away from the play. As far as the rest of the screen goes, all of our screens we teach the same way. We're fat. There's always going to be a guy for the force player. There's always going to be a blocker for the alley player. And then there's going to be a guy to pick up trash. So for our tunnel screen into the boundary, what we'll do is we have two separate calls that let the offensive line know if they're responsible for force alleying trash or if they're going to have help with the force player from either like a tight end or a receiver. So the scheme is basically the same, but who's responsible for what just changes slightly. And the biggest coaching points for the force, the alley, and the trash is we want those guys to come down the line flat initially, especially anybody who has to block the force player. So if you could imagine, you know, we're just in a regular gun right formation, and we're going to call our tunnel into the boundary on the left. What we'll do is, you know, the tailback, he's going to make his power fake. It's just going to be a little bit wider than normal to try and create a little bit wider of suck. And then the backside, the left guard, is going to pull just like he's going to pull on regular power. So now the offensive line, since we have nobody else to block into the boundary, they have to be responsible for fat, for force, alley, and trash. So the guy who's going to be responsible for the force would be that tackle, the left tackle. And his first step is going to be just like if he was going to funnel hinge on regular power. So he's going to, boom, step down. And if we got a disciplined defensive end, that defensive end is going to try and come, you know, a little bit flat down the line. And then he's going to drive off that leg, and the tackle is going to go flat looking to kick out. I'm a believer in you teach him a path as opposed to saying, hey, this is the guy that you're definitely going to block, because things change on the fly. Different guys might show up. But if that tackle goes flat and gets his eyes into the flat, he's going to see whoever is the most dangerous player that can tackle the tunnel and go kick that out. But he can only do that if he's going flat right down the line. And we do screen period, you know, once or twice a week working that kind of stuff. So the left tackle, he's got the force. He's going flat down the line looking to kick out, you know, hoping to kick out a cornerback. There's maybe nothing greater in a lineman's world than being able to kick out that little guy who talks a whole lot but never hits anybody. And then you have the guard, like I said, he's pulling, and that's just for the window dressing to help protect the power play. They can't say, hey, every time this guard pulls, they're running power right here. The center is going to, you know, scoop through the backside A-gap. So, you know, he's going the same direction that he normally would go on power. His technique is different because he's not trying to block back and hold somebody in the backside gap. He's actually, hey, I'm doing a bad job. Oh, you're beating me over the top. You're such a good defender. And then he's going to stay on his path, and he's got the alley. And so he's going to go flat. And what he's doing is he's taking a path that's going to take him between the numbers and the hash. And he's going to go flat, and he's going to scan his eyes looking flat and then going vertical down the field. And his eyes are going to tell him if he's got somebody to go block. And then the right guard at this point would be the trash guy. And he's going to do that poor down block technique just like the center. And the reason we, you know, say, hey, we want you to scoop through that guy so he beats you over the top is to help protect the quarterback. Because when it comes to any play, especially with all the RPO stuff, I don't want the quarterback to get hit. I don't know why some coaches are like, hey, it's cool, let's let a free guy just go smoke the quarterback. But I like to protect that guy, although I want him as clean as possible because that's when he's going to play his best. And so we have him scoop through so that those guys aren't getting a free shot, just going free willy-nilly up the field to hit the quarterback. He's going to scoop through. He's going to go flat. And the first thing that, you know, he's the trash guy. So is there somebody who's recognized the screen that might be able to tackle behind the tunnel? And usually it's the defense, you know, the defensive end to that side that might be able to redirect and make something happen. So that's what he peeks for first. And if there's nothing there, then he's going to take the same path just like the alley, and he's going to start going vertical looking for any opposite color jersey to pick up. The rest of the guys, they're running power. So the front side tackle, the front side tight end, receivers on that side, they're all making it look like it's all power. And then as far as the tunnel goes, we've gotten pretty detailed in coaching the tunnel path. Just because if you tell a guy to run the tunnel, you're going to get 15 different tunnel variations from the receivers. So, you know, we take one big pressure step, 2-3 to break it down and redirect. And we tell them, hey, we want you to redirect and retrace. to back to the line of scrimmage. Once you get back to the line of scrimmage, we want you to attack straight at the quarterback. So we're giving them, you know, clear visuals on where to go that are all eye-based. And then when you get them attacking straight at the quarterback, you've now eliminated the different paths that guys like to take when doing the tunnel. Because, you know, one guy is going to try and cut it short and go flatter. Another guy is going to like make like a really cool looping thing where he drags his leg and stuff. And you have all these different timing timings and guys running different paths. And that hurts the play. And it really hurts the quarterback because the quarterback wants to be able to catch it, you know, make a good hard ride and be able to boom, fling it out there on your upfield shoulder. But if it's all different, then he's going to have to take a little extra moment to figure out exactly where you're going.
So a lot of that comes down to training these guys. And you mentioned you have some screen periods you run during the week. Talk us through how you set up that drill and what you guys are able to accomplish there.
Yep. So for the team screen periods, we first started with cones as landmarks so they get an idea of being able to go flat in the general path. So that once they get comfortable and, hey, this is a scheme and this is my path, now we're going to add moving body parts. If we were a college program who had scout teamers and we could teach them how to be a great defense, we would use that. But, you know, a sophomore receiver who's, you know, worried about his math test might not give the best look as the cornerback who's going to have to take on a block from our, you know, 6'6 offensive tackle who's a senior, you know. So what we'll use is we'll actually have the coaches go out there to be the defenders. I mean, then we, you know, watch it on film afterwards to be able to kind of give the detailed coaching points that we miss going on the fly. But since the coaches know, hey, this is what the opponent does and where they're going to line up and more how they're going to play it, we have them out there with the bags. And, you know, they're not static, they're moving, so that way these guys are having to use VDA perception action in order to, you know, do their job.
Coach, let's talk through the game planning portion of this, because you have a lot of ways you could do it, you have ways to protect it. For you, how do you start to delineate what's going to be in your game plan for a particular week?
So I used to start with, hey, what looks give us the best advantage? And that's still something I use, but more so now it's who can we attack on the defense and how can we get them there? So we try and really hone in on the personnel that we want to attack and then how we can get them in the places where we want them to be to attack them the best. And that really is like our whole entire game planning method for, you know, regular run and pass downs is what player are we trying to attack? How can we get that player to be in that spot so we can have like our best guys attacking their worst guys? And then we have to look at, you know, outside of just the, you know, the guys down on the line of scrimmage is also linebacker level. You know, are they great at filling? You know, what are they reading? And then that kind of helps us dictate what RPOs we want to carry for the week and, you know, what can we do to slow down this good player, you know, or what can we do with this guy who likes to scrape very fast? What can we do to help protect against that? So to me, it's more about the personnel, who you want to attack, and then secondarily is, okay, how do we get them to be in those spots? And then that goes back to personnel and formation. So you're looking for, you know, the clear tendencies of how they set their front, how they set their linebackers, how they set their hybrid players and everything.
So when you're looking at your RPO portion of this, are you running your RPOs with the power scheme?
We are. And you know, we're not all gung-ho running RPO every single play. To me, there is merit of being able to tell the line, hey, we're running power. There's no other option. So we got to go get these tough yards, and it's on your backs.
When you're coaching the RPO to the lineman or calling that RPO, are they still going out and blocking it like normal, or is there something that tells them it's an RPO?
So they're blocking it like normal, but we do have a code, you know, code words to let them know that it's an RPO, and that mainly is going to change like a backside tackles technique, because once again, I don't want a free rusher at the quarterback. So he's going to, you know, be really cognizant of a first level defender, as opposed to, you know, like going a gap hinge and possibly letting the quarterback get hit when he pulls the ball.
And now, are you primarily reading that backside linebacker on your RPOs? Are you able to do it both ways?
Yeah, you know, we're like a lot of other people with the you have a pre-snap side and a post-snap side. You know, it tends to be, you know, second level players. And then against those, you know, cover two high, cover four teams, we have some of those third level RPOs. But predominantly, you know, the outside backer hybrid, you know, it's the guys who are in a conflict that have dual responsibilities. And now these defensive coaches are cheating, figuring out that they got to take guys out of conflict situations. And so we got to, you know, get back on the drawing board to figure out how we can put those guys back into conflict.
Now, your philosophy on the third level RPO, I know when we ran them, we kind of reversed it for our quarterbacks, and we told them it was more of a PRO. We wanted, if we're calling level three, we're thinking pass first, because we've seen something with that safety really cheating down and we have the opportunity. How do you approach that with your quarterbacks?
Yeah, same exact thing, where, you know, it's almost more of a play action. Like, we really should be expecting to throw this ball as opposed to handing it off. Cause like you said, we've seen this, these guys have seen, you know, our run, and they're really starting to come down. You're going to have a nice big window to put the receiver into. And then, you know, sometimes, Keith, when it comes down to that, we just call it a play action. You know, why even make it a read when we really feel as a coach that, hey, this is how it's going to pan out.
So, Coach, I guess I want to take a step back here, because when we look at, you know, the different variations of power, one we didn't mention, we talked a lot about the two back. We mentioned some other things here, but talk us through how you teach and run the one back power, and I guess the things that are going to vary for your guys.
Yeah, absolutely. When it comes to one back power, we actually do run one back power of two backs. It's a way for us to actually get split flow, where we have the fullback running his power path. He's just running it away from the play. And then, you know, everybody else is running regular one back power. So, you know, for us, we're multiple in our personnel, where we run the gamut from, you know, five wide all the way to, you know, every big guy that we have on campus lining up on the play to jam it down somebody's throat. So we needed a one back play. And since we're a gap team, we didn't have inside zone. So we were like, hey, you know, one back power is the answer, because it's still power, which we believe in. We've just been able, now we're able to do it out of a one back set. So we teach schematic wise, the backside center, guard, and tackle are quite similar to regular power. So the center is blocking to the backside A gap. He doesn't want to get beat over the top. The guard is pulling for the play side linebacker. The backside tackle is similar, because he's going to first step to the B gap, the backside B gap, but now he's not worried about that backside defensive end. So we don't actually hinge him on one back power. We let him go work up to the second level. And the way we're able to handle that backside defensive end is through either the quarterback reading him in the shotgun, or quarterback's boot action from under center, or when we're in the two back set, having the split flow of the fullback kick out that backside defensive end. And then on the front side, we teach one back power rules the opposite of two back power. So on two back power, I have my inside gap. That's the thing I'm most worried about. On one back power, we flip it. You got to worry about the outside gap first. So if I'm the tight end and I got somebody on my outside shoulder, I got to block it. If I'm a tackle, I got a guy on my outside shoulder, I got to block it. If I'm the guard on the play side, I got a guy on my outside shoulder, I got to block it. And that's basically how we teach it. It's just the inverse of regular power as far as how they're thinking about their blocking rules. For us, our tight end on one back power, we're not going to have them ever down block a C gap defender, because we're trying to hit it tight. So he'll always block the six or the nine technique, and then he'll arc to a hybrid if he's got a seven or a five inside of him and nobody on his outside shoulder. The tackle, he's either going to base block a five or a seven technique, or he's going to down block the four eye or the three technique, possible double team with the play side guard at that point. So once again, you know, we give them the clear rules that should account for basically every single front that we're going to see. And then as a coach, you just have to determine what fronts don't you like that against. And then you don't run that play against that front, you know?
I like that idea of being able to run a split flow with it. So a lot of that, I imagine, comes to how you call the play. So what will that play sound like for these guys for one back power?
Say we called regular power Chester and one back power Cheeto. If we just said I right, Cheeto right, that tells us, hey, we're running one back power to the right. And the fullback's rule on one back power is that I'm going to go kick out the backside defensive end. And that's his rule. You know, we have other tags where we could tag him to arc or run an arrow route like for an RPO. But his base rule is to kick out the backside defensive end. So if he knows that one back power is going to the right, he knows I got to go kick out the backside defensive end to the left and vice versa. If it's one back power to the left, he's going to kick out the defensive end that's on the right.
And then the other thing we talked about is you do have a power lead as well. Talk us through your power lead.
Yeah, so the power lead is a way for us to really try and hone in on the double team and being able to stay on the double team as opposed to having to go off onto a linebacker. So similar to the one back power rules that you have to worry about your outside gap first. And, you know, so if I have a guy on my outside, I got to go base block that. If I don't, I have a chance for a double team. And, you know, truly, I like running the power lead against, you know, wherever the three technique is going to be, because that's when you're able to stay on the double team basically forever. We tell the fullback that you have the play side linebacker and that it's a kick out block and you're tracking his inside V. I mean, that we're trying to get into that gallop mode as we're coming through the line of scrimmage. And then the guard, the backside guard, who normally pulls for that play side linebacker, we tell him to subtract a guy, and that's a new guy that you're going to be pulling for. And then the backside tackle is the gap hinge. So it's a great play when you're able to get, you know, any kind of six-man box with the over front. In order to do it, you know, out of 21 personnel with a seven-man box, you have to have some kind of a read element.
Well, Coach, you gave us a ton here today. You talked a lot about the scheme, the techniques, et cetera. But if we take a step back and you look at being the guy who's leading the offense here, what is it you feel that really gives your guys the winning edge?
I think the amount of details that we coach into the players gives us the winning edge, and then the fact that we're doing it, we're working together, and we really have a strong family bond with the players and the coaches. It really goes back to having a strong connection. When your culture, the people are all connected and you're all going in the same direction, then you're basically unconquerable. And then, you know, add in the fundamentals, techniques, and details that we instill into the players. We hold them accountable to them. We expect them to execute them at a high level. You combine all those things, and that's what I believe gives us the winning edge. You know, it starts from the guy on top, Coach T, who coaches the coaches in order to be able to do it, and then each man on the coaching staff getting each player to buy in. And once you have the buy-in, you're going to be winning quite a bit. You know, no matter what scheme, I love power, firm believer, but a lot of people have won using zone, and both of them can be just as physical, but it's all about the attitude that it's taught with and the attitude that you have your players rep it with.
I love it, Coach. For our listeners out there, how can they connect with you?
I am on Twitter. My handle's at Coach D. Shack, S-H-A-C-K, like the little house, not S-H-A-Q, like the gigantic basketball Hall of Famer. We're just like, I'm just a couple inches shorter than him. So I'm on Twitter. I don't do, you know, InstaFace or any of that kind of stuff. I just tweet.
Awesome. Little Bill Belichick humor there for you, right?
That's right. That's right. Yes, sir.
Well, Coach, I really appreciate you taking the time and putting the detail into this. I certainly would love to have you back and talk to us again. And best of luck to you and the Eagles in 2020.
Thanks for having me on, Keith. It's awesome what you and USA Football are doing for the football community. So thank you very much for everything.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.